If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. This time it's part two of my conversation with Neil Twist, an Australian academic and self-confessed beginner stitcher. And in this half, we go deeper into Neil's research on historic Australian samplers and the stories that they hold, from 18th century orphanages to the hidden histories of everyday stitching. We talk about the moral messages embedded in needlework, the lack of textiles in traditional art history education, and how Neil's thesis is starting to evolve as he uncovers more. There's also a good bit of chat about samplers as a meditative practice, technology as a liberating force, and how cross-stitch can still feel like a bit of a revolution. Now, I wasn't planning on this being a proper needle exchange with Neil, so we don't do any of his favourites, although, I mean, he's a man of great taste, so I'm sure they would have been great. But this was an ad hoc conversation that we were having, and I enjoyed it so much I thought it was worth turning into a needle exchange, so here we are. If you're based in Australia, in particular, I know Neil is interested in understanding the connections between needlework and the Australian art history. So if you have got anything that you'd like to share, get in touch with me, hello@needle.exchange, and I will pass your information on to him because I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Also, if you enjoyed Needle Exchanges 19 and 20 with the mighty Isabella Rossner, there's a lot of crossover here, particularly if you are a bit of a history buff. And just a quick reminder, if this chat resonates with you, share it with a friend or tag us on socials, as it's a great way to spread news about the podcast. I will be back next week with somebody else from a part of the embroidery universe. So until then, enjoy the show.
So since you began doing needlework, what stitch has been your, I'm assuming cross stitch, but
yeah,
has that been the sole focus of your practice, or have there been other elements of needlework that have played a part as well?
So I have this weird thing. It's akin to cobbler's boots, I suspect, where I've ended up often being so busy that I've barely had any time to do any stitching. So for instance, this year I have not done any stitching. Last year I did some stitching that started in March and ended in July. And in March, our dog was put down, and in July we got a puppy, and all the bandwidth I had suddenly evaporated again. So I have these artistic ideas, and I mitigate this with the fact that, like, I was producing a magazine and doing all the desktop publishing. So there's creative processes there, or curating things. If I do stuff, I do it in cross stitch because I still think there's a ton of potential there. And for me, I think it is the singular strongest meditative practice. And my thesis, which I've been saying a lot in the past week or so, is like, when you meditate, your mind wanders and you're meant to come back to center. When you do cross stitch, you're bringing the needle through a hole in the fabric about every 2/3 of a second, which means you're center, 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 center. And if you do that for an hour, that's an incredibly mindful experience. Right. In a way that I think other forms of embroidery, even if it's just simple freehand hand embroidery, you're making more decisions. Cross stitch goes, put it in that hole. It's a no-brainer. You don't have to think about it. You just have to follow the chart. So I find it is the most powerful of the meditative practices. They all have mindfulness, but that freedom from decision-making because you're following a chart and all you've got to do is a row of 10 stitches. So for me, I come back to that. And I guess that's the realm that I've existed in the most because I still consider it to be like a gateway craft. And I call it that because you start with that and then you move on to harder crafts if you want. Now, for a long time, I've also had this mindset that says, if somebody doesn't like the work you're doing, say, for instance, you do a cross stitch that says the queen is dead, just for sake of argument. I was thinking of something rude, but I'm not going to. Say you do something that says queen is dead. Some people won't like that and they can go, I don't like it because it's cross stitch. So they can use the medium as an excuse because they're not happy with the content, but they can blame it on the cross stitch. So part of me thought it would be great somewhere down the line to try and learn Japanese embroidery, which is the most ultra disciplined. You know, if your stitch is a degree out, it's not proper. And it's what I admire about people who do Royal School of Needlework courses. There was a girl called Charlotte Bailey who was a graduate, and she did a series of pieces that were subverting chocolate bar logos. So she did one that instead of saying Cadbury's, it said calories, and it was all to do with eating disorders. But it was done in like papal quality gold work, you know, RSN standard. So you can't fault the technique. There's no getting out of it. If you didn't like it, you had to say, I'm not comfortable with the content. And I always thought that was an interesting place to be, you know, to be able to do work that is unapologetic and for people to not be able to go, oh yeah, but it's just a bit of cross stitch. But I think what's fascinated me about cross stitch in particular is just it's just two X's, but it can be extrapolated in so many different directions. So you do get traditional looking cross stitch samplers that people are familiar with. And then every now and again, they get subverted. I remember, you know, 2009 seeing a Cthulhu one, which was kind of fun because instead of the names, it was all like Nuggars and whatever the Cthulhu Lovecraftian language is, you know, so you get that. But then you get, you know, like Marina Bolmini is another one who does brandalism. She subverts brands. She does it in cross stitch. The trade-off between it being this cute, familiar craft form that is then used for hard-hitting things. Tanya Bukau is an artist who has done pieces that relate to migrants and like migration centers and big pieces that would show refugees on boats and cross stitches of their faces. And because it's a face and it's done in cross stitch, it stops and makes you think. And that means that you have to reconnect with the humanity of the situation rather than it being a face that you see on a newsreel or something. Yeah. So this is what fascinates me about cross stitch is it's just this little thing and yet it remains pixel art. It, you know, it remains, there's so many different ways of doing it, 3D versions of it, that it seems like there's an infinite amount of possibility still just within that one form.
Yep. Yep.
If I had any time to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, so the thing that I'm working on as an idea that I got after my dog had died was, let me find the pictures now. There's a Game Boy camera and it's like a pixelated emulator. So I didn't get the Game Boy camera, but I've got a Game Boy camera emulator on my phone. Let me get it up. So it looks like a Game Boy.
Yep.
But the camera, let me go backwards. It's like a fully functioning camera, okay?
Yep.
Can you see that all right?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But what it does is it takes these pictures that are really pixelated, okay?
Yes.
And I find that kind of fascinating. So what I ended up doing was just getting this and I would just take random photos of things. So for instance, I don't know whether you can read that. That's some people queuing.
Yep.
To get on a tube train in London.
Yep, yep, yep.
And there's something that interests me about that as though that was the best technology at the time. Imagine, yeah. You know, like when we had like actual film cameras. So then what I did was I would just take random pictures of those. And I've got things like, I don't know, that was a picture of my daughter and her cousin. Is it focusing?
Yep.
And there's something I just love. I don't know if it's going to zoom in. About the pixely of it.
Yep. Got it.
Right?
Yep.
So then the one piece that I've done or that I'm working on, and then I just have to wait for my dog to now die again, was I took a photo of some cutlery in a sink.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yep. Yep. No, I can see.
Yeah, it's not quite focusing.
No, I can kind of see how it's pixelated.
Yeah, and there's something interesting in that. I might see if I can share a picture of it. Because to me, it's like, it's the best photo of the thing at the time, using the best technology at the time. And because it's an early form of pixel art, then it can be extrapolated into cross-stitch. So then you get these series of cross-stitch pieces of like mundane life that's done in that way. So it's almost like a weird modern day sampler, except it isn't. It's just a cross-stitch snapshot of life. But in some ways, I still consider samplers to be a form of documentary.
Yeah.
So it's almost like documenting the everyday in this highly pixeled way, going, oh, I took the best photo I could on my camera that I had.
Well, and the everyday at a point in time. Like I was telling a friend the other day about how so many samplers are about death. And she's saying, what, these are done by little kids? And I said, yes, but they were surrounded by death. A lot of samplers or, you know, there are samplers that are about, that are memorials to a dead sibling and, or samplers about, the ones that get me are the ones that are, you know, along the lines of, if I work hard and I'm a good person, then everything will be all right when I'm dead. Everything about, you know, the finality of life, which, you know, would have not, you know, people, I assume, in the 18th century wouldn't have batted an eyelid about that. Today, you know, it's very different. And so I don't know if that makes much sense, but that...
No. Yeah. So here's the thing. Sarah Corbett from the Crafterist Collective, right? Friend of mine. She encourages people to do gentle protests. So maybe making protest banners, getting involved in campaigns that they're interested in and using textile art and needlework as a form of that. And one of her concepts, which I heartily agree with, is if you spend time in that mindful space and you're thinking about a subject, a friend or a loved one or a campaign that matters to you, you're just spending that time thinking about it, you know. So I like the idea of like power mantras, of getting people who perhaps, paraphrasing, but people who may have mental health concerns, if you were able to give them a mantra that was contrary to the way they feel about themselves to empower them, and they spend 10 hours thinking of that, it's like a mantra, you know, and you feel like every single stitch would reinforce that. So if you've got a young person aged 8 in an orphanage somewhere who's stitching, if I behave myself, I will go to heaven when I die, they're spending like 15 hours bedding that idea into their brains. Yep. You know, it's building neural pathways. It's like quite a profound method of like social layering.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Bit kind of scary.
Well, it
depends what you're being taught, though, doesn't it? That's the problem. You'd like to think in this day and age we could have an enlightened form of that might explain to people that we're all, you know, reflections of an infinite energy source, and it doesn't really get more complex than that. But who's to say, right? So how much stitching have you done?
Very little. I have done, I am currently working on a bunch of grapes, which I'm enjoying. I've just done a pumpkin. My first piece was a sheep. So I'm on my third piece of needlework. So I am a beginner.
Has it been easy for you to find stuff that you wanted to do? It feels like those, I don't know you, so maybe you love grapes, in which case you like wine.
No.
This is just part of a thing.
That was the thing. I started looking online and I kept coming across this twee stuff. I don't mean to be disrespectful.
No. Say it. We're in safe space. All right. Yeah.
For God's sake. I just thought, and there was one site that I came across completely randomly, and it had fruit and vegetables. And I thought, oh, well, at least it's not, you know, anyway.
I used to say to people, I was saying this at the week last week as well, that like when I first started, the first thing I did was an Art Nouveau head by Alphonse Mucha, because that was the thing. I found it in a haberdashery shop. I was like, I like that. I like Mucha. I like the outlines. I like comic book art. It appealed to me. So I bought that kit because I thought it'd be funny because I was going on a plane journey. Imagine what people will think. They see someone the size of me doing cross stitch, etc. And when I finished that, I kind of looked around to see what else was there. And what it reminds me of is crap Father's Day cards.
Yes.
These are the kind of themes that I would get if I wanted to be a man. A pint of beer, a Spitfire. And it's like, fair enough for some people, but that's not what I wanted, you know, and it was a real struggle. So I think I did a geisha girl, then close, and then after that I found one that was a kiss by Klimt, which is 70,000 stitches that I never managed to finish. And then thankfully, somewhere in all that mix, I discovered PC Stitch, which was the software that then meant I could make my own patterns, and that unlocked it, because then suddenly I could import pictures and I could make patterns that reflected my tastes. And suddenly that was a sense of relief because I was able to break free. And that's the other conversation, is like the ecosystem of needlework, right? So I've just spent a week doing this Stitch Festival and I've had these pieces up. I started my magazine in 2017. I had like 40 pieces of cool and interesting cross stitch on the walls. Some people had never seen anything like it before. I started Mr. X Stitch in 2008. Some people had never seen anything like it before. It's 17 years later. And the interesting thing is looking and seeing the broad ecosystem of needlework, the broad story that's being told, and realize that despite pockets of it, despite queer threads, despite neurodiverse stitches on Etsy and Instagram and these little pockets where people are finding their own ways, the ecosystem's like this blooming iceberg thing, an ice shelf that slowly moves, and you think you're going to change it. And I didn't have many people going, oh, it's a bit unusual, a man doing Stitch, because I was in a Stitch Festival, but still having, like, I don't know, an exploding car cross stitch. Or there was one guy, there's a pixel artist who I did a pattern with, and it's a flaming brain, a brain that's on fire, saying, what were you thinking? And it's really weird. And for some people, they couldn't conceive of anything like that. And you're like, this is 2025. I've been singing from this song sheet for 17 years, and it doesn't feel sometimes like anything's changed. And I'll finish my rant in a minute, but like, you look at some of the big players in these organizations, the publishing houses, the production, the companies that produce kits, and you just see them as being big organizations that are still just catering to the middle of the road. And what they're doing is they're reinforcing the story that says needlework's for women, and needlework is safe, and it's not an art form.
Oh, I agree. I mean, even where you go and buy your supplies, you know, I did, as part of my course, I did botanical drawing in a fine arts course. And, you know, the place that I went to get supplies for that was an art shop, you know, you know, with tubes of oil paints and water paints and stuff. The place I go to buy things for needlework is very different. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but and it's hard to explain, but I get what you're saying. There's a whole lot of baggage that comes with these things that leads to people make, then everything reinforces everything else. So people make assumptions about what needlework is, therefore where you buy needlework stuff is
It's the end product. It's the end of a pathway that just says you end up catering, and it's a self-perpetuating thing. And so many local needlework shops are awesome places that just want people to try needlework. But if their wholesalers are only providing them with stuff that's of a certain genre, they don't have any choice.
Yeah.
And like I did 5 issues of my magazine in print format, and I managed to get the magazine into a shop over here called Hobbycraft, which is one of the bigger chain stores. So I had a £10 magazine, and in order to sell that to Hobbycraft, I had to sell it at £4. Then I had to pay a certain amount for it to go on the shelves in each store. So I'm getting maybe £3 an issue, for sake of argument. And then at the end of its run, they would just destroy all the remaining copies. So it's such a sunk cost. Like the economies of scale for me to have broken even on that sort of thing are ridiculous. Because in order to get a magazine printed for £3 a copy, I would probably have had to have got like 25,000 copies done or something ridiculous, you know? And so it was just unfeasible. And that's just me trying to punch my way into that ecosystem and realize it's impossible because of the way it's built.
Yeah.
Let alone all the other bits and pieces. So it's like, I think a lot of local needle shops would show as much diverse stuff as they could, but it's nearly impossible unless you live near them and you can hand them to them or something, you know?
Yeah. But I think that's what is so great about technology is that, you know, the fact that I've been able to connect with people like you and Isabella, the fact that I've found, you know, there's a site that has reproductions that even for a beginner like me are quite accessible. Mm-hmm. And I forget what the name of the site was, but it means that particularly, I mean, in Australia, it's such a small market that our choice for a lot of things is pretty dismal. And that goes for the arts even more so, because within a small market there's a tiny market, so the ability for shops to cater for everybody's taste is very hard. So for us, online is brilliant. It's just so liberating, and it means that you know, once I get my grapes done, I will have access to a whole lot of things that will keep me interested and advocating for needlework, which I might not otherwise have done.
Yeah,
I can imagine
tricky.
I would have lost interest with, you know, fairies and mushrooms pretty quickly.
I had a semantic, it was a polite a disagreement with somebody at my stall last week who was saying that cross-stitch was her guilty pleasure. And I was like, I'm not accepting that, because it shouldn't be a guilty pleasure. But that is also a reflection of this thing of like, if you put the time into making something, really you want to be able to stick it front and center in your sitting room so that people can enjoy it. And it's difficult. It's difficult when your choice is limited. As you say now, there's never been a better time to find stuff that reflects your own taste or to be able to make stuff that reflects your own taste. But unless you take the blue pill, I suppose, you know, unfortunately, if you go to your local needlework store or a supermarket that's selling the stuff, you're still only got the middle of the road presented to you. And so for a lot of people, it is a turnoff. It's really hard. It's hard to go down that route. I guess I don't know if I got lucky or just you get a point of frustration where you're like, I've been cross-stitching for 2 years and it's still crappy Father's Day cards. I don't want to do that, you know. That's always been part of my mission, and that's what's been amazing to see with the way Instagram has helped support needlework awareness and the throughput of inspiration and stuff, is people can see what other people are doing and how weird and how inventive it can be, and hopefully that then gives them the impetus to make those changes themselves. What we do about the bigger ecosystem that we're surrounding, because it's, like I say, it's just the end output of that story that says, women, sit in the corner, do needlework, be safe and quiet. Men, be powerful, take over the world. You know, all of that claptrap. It's all just this weird consequence, and we're still in that kind of marketing-oriented outcome of all that.
Very true. And I think it's a constant fight in the sense that, you know, when Trump first got elected in 2016, I remember saying to someone, this is it. These are the death throes of the Patriot. it's happening, because I spoke way too soon. And it was during the campaign, and I can remember thinking, there's no way in hell they're going to elect Trump. And, you know, Hillary Clinton will be the first female president. The world will change. And here we are, 8 years, 9 years later, and the world is changing. But, you know, and as I say, you know, it's a constant, that ability to buck the system is kind of as hard as it ever was. Like when men were stitching for therapy after World War One. You know, it's things are slow to change. But anyway,
I find that I'm trying to adopt a sort of a pragmatism now. Right, I just turned 50, and I think there's a point when you realise that you can't change the whole world. Really, not even Donald Trump can change the whole world. I mean, he can blow it up probably, but. So then you think, what can you change? And you think about how you can change your life locally, you know. And we were talking about this, me and Sarah Corbett, the other day. You know, sometimes the only change you can be certain of is the change that you make inside yourself. So if you're a man who chooses to do needlework and you can find peace with that and you can make things that bring your immediate circle of happiness, that's a win. That's a win you've got in the bag, you know? Maybe you can scale it up to the next level and change the way people think around you. You know, I've been very lucky in the town that I live in now. I've been here for 5 years and we've managed to set up a community interest company. We've taken an empty shop and we've opened up an art space in there. And that's not been done in the town before. So maybe you can get those kind of wins. But I now know that I've created a world-class magazine that has, you know, needlework artists in it, loads of really cool patterns, and I still haven't been able to change the world of cross-stitch. And so you think, I'll just, you know, there's a certain amount of fortitude, but I think I've said this enough times in the past, but there's a book I really like that's called Meditation for Mortals, and it's by a guy called Oliver Berkman, and he used to write a column for The Guardian, and he wrote another book called 4,000 Weeks, and it talks about how we're finite beings. And because we're finite, we'll never be as brilliant as our ideal version of ourselves. Like, I could be a meditating vegan that went out for a jog this morning, but I'm not. And we'll never do all the things we could do. The things we do will never be as good as we think they could be. And if we can accept that, we can relax a little bit. He uses the analogy of if you're walking in the rain, there comes a certain point where you have to go, I'm just going to get wet. And, you know, if you haven't got an umbrella, you know, stop trying to be dry. I'm just going to get wet. And that relaxation into it. And I've had the same thing because with my magazine, I've not been able to market it properly or build a business properly or whatever it is that I've not been able to make that my sole living. I ended up having to get a day job. And now with the magazine, because of other things going on, I'm kind of maybe going to make an annual cross-stitch magazine rather than a quarterly one because I can't sustain the throughput of it all. And I go, well, maybe that's fine. Like, I'm not going to win these battles because I don't have the resource. So it's not that I'm going to stop completely. I'm just going to reframe the perspective and go, do you know what? If I can make a few people have things in their houses they're proud to show, like, that's a victory, you know?
I think you're underestimating your victories. And what I would say is when I discovered Mr. X-Stitch, I thought, oh my God, it was a revelation. And, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but one of the reasons was there was all this amazing, cool stuff. It wasn't the bad Father's Day cards. And so, and that really sparked my interest. It was one of a couple of things that really sparked my interest, but I must say it was pretty transformational. So I think, you know, from this beginner's point of view, you're a hero. So, I wouldn't underestimate the power of what you've done because, and I think that is where technology helps a lot as well, because I never would have had access to anything like that were it not for the internet. And we wouldn't be having this conversation. And, you know, I would have maybe not chosen to do a thesis on needlework. So, you know, from my point of view, what you've done with Mr. X-Stitch is transformational. And I think it's one of those things that I think you underestimate the power of it. And I say that with respect. But
And thank you. That's really nice. You know, and I think the thing is I do have those moments. Like when I was at the Stitch Festival last week, I met somebody who'd bought my book like 7 years previously, and it changed the way that they felt about needlework and stuff. And I know that if I spin back through Instagram, there's a ton of stuff out there. I've been really lucky, and I've been really lucky to be able to use my novelty to the effect of being able to like disarm people's preconceptions and then have an interesting conversation about needlework and textile art. I think the point I was sort of trying to make though is just we can beat ourselves up, or we can try and change so many things, but actually even if it's just we change the art in our living room to something that we're really happy of, and we've been able to do that using needlework, then that's a bonus. Because there is so much out there, and I still remain optimistic. You still hope that somewhere down the line we'll find this great balance. But it's interesting for me, particularly last week, to be reflecting on 17 years of doing this stuff and seeing that the world has not shifted much. If you look in online, it shifted loads. If you look in the real world, it's not shifted as much as you might think. It's a funny perspective.
Yeah.
Made me feel quite old. It's like, well, I've been in this for ages now, son. Still ain't changed nothing. But I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean. It's and I think, you know, Instagram, for better or worse, has been massive in that respect. You know, I feel like there was a... Because I've had to write... Oh, I've got to finish it, actually. I've had to write an article for the RSN about some of the history, like 21st century embroidery. And again, I think a lot of the social media, particularly me arriving in 2008, obviously changed everything. Or maybe Facebook changed everything. But, you know, that upswing, that kind of tide definitely helped at that point. There's no denying that. You just hope that it can translate into the real world and that people can, like, make connections as you've done with your embroidery skills, you know, and meet like-minded people and be proud to be stitching whatever they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Namaste. That's what it feels like. Has that been helpful?
Extremely helpful. Extremely helpful. And I've bought your book. It's on its way. So I look forward to reading it. And thank you very much for your time. As I say, I didn't, and I'm sorry our conversation has gone for
right.
long.
I
just wanted to kind of say
hello, really,
but it's been so much more, so I'm very grateful.
Do you know what I would like to do, seriously, is I wouldn't mind, I've got a bit of a scheduling issue with my podcast in as much as I need to get a podcast edited, and I've got an interview that I did with Sarah last week that I was going to put up as a sort of like rough and ready. I wouldn't mind, if you're up for it, I wouldn't mind putting this conversation up as a podcast, because we've not said anything controversial, but it's been a really interesting chat, and I'd quite like to just kind of put it out there so that people can just have a listen and draw their own conclusions. It's up to you.
Yeah, sure. Do it.
That sound. I will need you to send me a picture, maybe of one of those samplers that you talked about that we can use as a thumbnail for it.
Ah, yes.
Because that would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I just said, because it's an interesting chat, you know, and I value it. It's nice to talk around these houses. Do you know what I mean? I appreciate the fact that you're the start of this. And that's why I was like, what's your thesis? I'm trying to work out what you think samplers are all about. Where at this... Maybe we can talk in 6-9 months' time and you can tell me what samplers are all about.
I'd love to, because I think what's very quickly happening is that what I thought was a sampler even a few months ago is not what I think is a sampler now. And so my learning curve, as they say, is very, very steep at the moment. So, you know, what the hell? I'm happy for you to put your discussion with a complete idiot.
An emerging academic on the subject, did you say, Neil?
yeah. Emerging, you know, and embryo
and will be bigger
soon. Anyway, yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, actually, is if I was trying to think of... There's two needlework artists that I work with on the magazine who it might be worth chatting to just because they're Antipodean like yourself. So there's a girl called Nikki McDonald, she's mostly kind of needlepoint, quite big kind of art, but she has an interesting kind of graphic approach. I've done a needle exchange with her in the past, so you can listen to that. But I'm sure if you find her on Instagram, message her, tell her that I recommended that you have a chat. I mean, that'll either help or hinder things. I don't really know. No, we should be. Nikki's lovely. Nikki's really lovely. So I think she'd probably be an interesting person to talk with. And also someone called Leah Emery, who has done some of the best designs. Like issue 4 of my magazine, we had a cross stitch of a bunch of roses inside a toilet. And that was by Leah Emery. Like, she does some of the most strange cross stitches, but she's like this living, breathing art thing going on or whatever. And she, again, if you wanted to talk about like Australian needlework, I feel like you'd get a good bit of mileage out of getting her perspective on the matter.
Yep. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Tell them both I said.
I will.
Because they're good eggs.
Well, getting referrals from people has served me well so far with enabling me to make connections with both yourself and Isabella. So I will do that shamelessly.
Yeah. I mean, me and Isabella are like the Alpha and the Omega, and I'm not sure which one's which, but I think that, you know, she's awesome. I love her. I think she's the best. She's like the right person in that right kind of perspective, you know, because she's got this enthusiasm, but she's Californian. And so you put those two things together. Hey, everybody, let's talk about... I love the fact that you said she was like, and then she had this Tasmanian sample. And I was like, of course she did. Of course she did. You could like pick a part of the world and Isabella will have found some interesting needlework from it because she's that good. Absolutely love it. That sound. All right. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to having another chat when I'm much more knowledgeable. I might be able to get back to Britain at the end of the year. And if I do, I crew will be on my phone.
Just come into Manchester Airport instead of London Airport, and then you're a lot easier because we're only like 40 minutes from there. That'd be easy.
I should.
We'll go and sink a couple of tin. Well, no, we'll have a bottle of red wine. We'll talk around the houses.
I like beer.
I know, I don't anymore. I was trying to be cool. I'm much more a red wine and whiskey guy now, to be honest. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NEEDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.